This episode of the Children's Literature Podcast is brought to you by Homemade Strawberry Jam. Homemade Strawberry Jam. It's delicious, but your kitchen floor will be sticky for weeks. Welcome to the Children's Literature Podcast. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. This episode is about Paul Bunyan. Tomorrow is the 4th of July, so I thought I'd celebrate with a bit of American folklore. You don't hear many tall tales being told anymore, and I think that ought to change. But first, I wanted to remind everyone that the 100th episode is coming up soon. Co-host Chloe and I are collecting questions from listeners to answer during the show. You can ask us anything. Send in your question to letters@childrensliteraturepodcast.com. I also wanted to give an update on my efforts to make friends with a robin in my garden. Back in episode 68, I talked about how Frances Hodgson Burnett very accurately described the natural behaviors of the British robin in The Secret Garden. It's fairly common for these cheeky little birds to adopt a gardener as a friend, becoming quite comfortable with close contact. I'd been doing a bit of digging in my own garden and noticed that a robin was nesting in the tree next door. I named him Ben and hoped we might be friends. I am sad to say that while Ben is perfectly happy to eat any grubs I dig up for him, he's not especially interested in being close pals. However, a male blackbird has become my unexpected gardening buddy instead. My daughter named him Kevin. His behavior is very different from that of a robin. He doesn't want to be admired, and when he looks at me, it's not to be sure that I can see he's showing off. He's learned that I can be trusted, and he is content to hop around fairly close to me while I'm digging up his dinner, but he's a bit more wild and wary than his red-coated neighbor. That's just fine with me, though, because he frequently sings some very nice music for me from the top of the fence. Maybe Ben already has a human that he's adopted, or maybe it'll just take another season to win him over. Either way, I'm glad Kevin started hanging around. American tall tales aren't really any different than folk tales from other cultures, although the fact that they're so modern means that we do often know more about their origins, and sometimes even their authors. The name of Paul Bunyan wasn't found in print until 1893, but it's possible that stories about him were told a few decades earlier in the logging communities in places like Michigan, Minnesota, and the Dakota Territories. Tales of Paul Bunyan were also told across the border in nearby Canadian logging communities. Stories of Paul Bunyan reflect the multicultural makeup of 19th century logging camps. The name of the character works whether pronounced in English or Quebecois, the Canadian French dialect. Some English speakers said that Paul's surname refers to the painful foot ailment of Bunyan's, and some French speakers say that his name comes from a Quebecois expression that means, oh my gosh, Bunyan! Either interpretation makes sense, as they're both silly, and these are funny, lighthearted tales. I quite like that these stories seem to have been shared by English and Quebecois speakers, as this was a time where, in Canada, the minority population of mainly Catholic French speakers were the official targets of not just personal bigotry, but outright discrimination by the Canadian government. The majority population of Protestant English speakers controlled the law, banking, and education, and they looked down on Catholic French speakers as backward and inferior, much in the same way that the English viewed Irish people at this point in history. So even if these two populations didn't generally get along, it's nice to see that working-class guys who worked together on logging teams were happy to set aside their differences at the end of the day and tell stories together. You also see a lot of references to Scandinavians in Paul Bunyan's stories. Several members of Paul's crew have Scandinavian names like Ole or Gunnarsson. This reflects the large numbers of immigrants from Norway and Sweden who brought their traditional knowledge of forestry to their new homes in America. So from the very beginning, Paul Bunyan's stories have always been multicultural, welcoming anyone who likes a good laugh to the campfire. So, who is Paul Bunyan? Really, he can be whoever you need him to be, as long as it makes for a good story. But generally, he's described as a giant lumberjack with unbelievable strength. He's able to clear huge swaths of forest in a day, and can even shape the earth with his movements. He's kind to animals, and the ones that he looks after grow to be as enormous as he is. He's also described as being kind, caring, and concerned with the welfare of other people. Think of him as if he were Godzilla, except instead of smashing up Tokyo, he's just a really good lumberjack who is super nice to his coworkers. Nobody ever believed Paul Bunyan was a real person. Well, except possibly some young new guys at a logging camp who get fooled by the older hands. Stories about him were invented by loggers to help them relax and have a laugh at the end of the day. Logging was a tough career. The work was dangerous and difficult, with a high risk of injury and early death. Many of the men were Scandinavian immigrants, as lumber has always been an important trade in that part of the world, and others were Americans or Canadians born in the heavily wooded areas near the Great Lakes or the Pacific Northwest. It was common for fathers and sons to work together, as individual teams were often operated as family businesses that hired out to larger logging companies. The all-male crews lived in isolated camps during the summer work season, and if they got home at the end of the day without being smashed by a falling tree, they were hungry and in need of a few laughs. It was by the flickering campfires of American and Canadian logging camps that tales of Paul Bunyan started circulating. These stories reflected the lives of the lumberjacks and show real awareness about just how fast the world was changing because of the work they did. Here's a biography of Paul Bunyan that I've assembled from various tales I've heard about him. Or, I should say, a possible biography. There's no official version. Anything about Paul Bunyan can be true, as long as it makes for a good story. The only essential parts are that Paul must be an enormous, incredibly strong lumberjack who's good-natured and helpful. This is just a small amount of what I've heard from campfire stories and books of folklore, and any one of these facts can be drawn out into a story of its own. Paul Bunyan was born in Maine. When he arrived, the baby was so big it took a dozen storks to deliver him. His ma and pa had to milk 20 cows just to fill his baby bottle, and if they didn't feed him fast enough, the rumbling of his tummy caused earthquakes. The only cradle big enough for him was a fishing boat, and when little Paul would rock in the bay, it sent tidal waves onto the shore. After a spell, Paul's folks thought it would be best to move somewhere where there was more room for their, little boy. So they packed up and headed west into the big woods. One winter, it was so cold that the snow turned blue. It was so cold that the very words people spoke froze and fell to the ground, shattering in silence. It was so cold that the thermometer put on a winter coat and refused to take it off so everyone could see the exact number of degrees below zero. It was so cold that when the old-timers popped out their false teeth, those chompers kept right on chattering. Paul went out for a little wander when the blue snow fell, marveling at how silent and still everything was. But just as he rounded a clump of spruce trees, he heard a mournful sound coming from a big blue snowdrift. Paul looked, and inside was a little baby ox, shivering and blue with the cold. Paul scooped up the poor little feller and took him home. He fed him warm soup and buckets of hot milk, and soon the ox was feeling well again. But he stayed blue for all his days. Paul named him Babe, and the two were best friends for life. Paul took good care of Babe, and the little ox calf grew quickly. One morning, Paul went out to the barn to check on his friend, and to his surprise, he found that both Babe and the barn were gone. Paul stomped around frantically, causing the ground to shake. Until at last, on a grassy hilltop, he found Babe munching grass while wearing the barn wedged tight on his back. Little Babe had grown so much overnight that he filled up the entire barn and carried it away with him. This made Paul quite cheerful as he could see that Babe would become the perfect partner for his work. After a little bit of training, Babe could help Paul haul 100 trees at once. Paul could hitch up Babe to a crookedy river, and the blue ox would pull it straight so that the logs could float down nice and easy. As Paul grew up, he learned to follow his father in the trade of a lumberjack. When at last Paul and Babe were ready, they headed just a bit further west to look for work. When they arrived in Minnesota, Paul could see that Babe would need drinking water, so he dug several enormous troughs, and today, these are the Great Lakes. As Paul walked back and forth carrying away the extra dirt from digging, his enormous footsteps filled with water, making Minnesota the land of 1,000 lakes. At last, the two of them set up camp by the Onion River, the biggest camp there ever was. You'd have to pack a week's worth of food to carry it with you if you needed to walk from one side to the other. And of course, to help him, Paul needed his crew. There was Johnny Inkslinger, the clerk who kept the books, and Big Ole, the smithy, who could make anything using just the steely look in his eye. There were 7 axemen. Each one was named Elmer and was 6 feet tall while he was sitting down. Brimstone Bill looked after Babe, and Sourdough Sam kept everybody fed. Big Ole made a griddle so enormous that you couldn't see across it when it was sizzling with heat. The chefs would strap sides of ham to their feet and skate around the griddle to grease it up. And they'd pour down the pancake batter using 5,000-gallon pails held up from the tops of the tallest trees in camp. Paul and his crew moved around, cutting timber wherever it was needed. And Paul left his mark on the land. One evening, Paul and Babe got to roughhousing. Babe would paw and kick, and Paul would stomp as the ox charged at him. They had such a tussle and kicked up so much land that the entire chain of the Rocky Mountains had been raised up before they were done. Another time, the crew got lost on their way to the Oregon Territory. They took a wrong turn at Tulsa and ended up in the Sonora Desert. Everyone was just dying of thirst, and soon even Paul couldn't hold up his axe. He let it drop, and as he walked, it dragged along, carving the Grand Canyon into the red soil. Paul and Babe lived a good long time together, but one day the blue ox died after eating too many pancakes. Paul wept an entire river of tears, so many that the Mississippi River is still flowing today. Babe was buried in the Dakota Territory, and the mound over him is now known as the Black Hills. Eventually, the lower 48 states got just a little too crowded and a little too civilized for Paul's taste, so he packed up and moved to Alaska. Folks don't see him too much these days, but they say you can still hear his laughter rolling over the great mountains like thunder, and at night, the gleam from his campfire reflects off his axe, shining in the skies as the northern lights. Tales of Paul Bunyan have been told, retold, remade, forgotten, and remembered over and over again. Walt Disney did a nice adaptation that added some new stories about Paul's childhood, and if you're ever driving around the upper Midwest, you might suddenly be surprised to see some massive statues of Paul and Babe standing outside a gas station. Paul Bunyan has appeared in a Marvel comic book, and Bugs Bunny claimed to have known him. There's even a reference to Paul in the video game Red Dead Redemption 2. The strangest adaptation of tall tales about Paul Bunyan was an opera with music written by Benjamin Britten and words written by W.H. Auden. Now, I think it's good for artists to experiment and try new and even crazy things, but I think you can imagine how well it went down when a couple of wealthy, upper-class British artists tried to do a high theater version of what are campfire stories told by the hardest working of working-class folks. The Paul Bunyan opera was so poorly received that the composer withdrew it from circulation and didn't bring it back until 30 years later. I managed to listen to the whole thing, but only just. It's 2 hours long, and that's too long. I love Benjamin Britten's other work, so I guess this is just a good reminder that even a genius composer makes mistakes sometimes. You can use Paul Bunyan's stories as an introduction to North American geography. If you give your students a blank map with an outline of the continent, you can have them draw major features while telling tall tales of how Paul helped shape them. There are Paul Bunyan stories about the Great Lakes, the Mississippi River, the Grand Canyon, Puget Sound, the Black Hills, the Gulf of St. Lawrence, and a whole lot more. Whatever features you need to teach to your kids, there's a Paul Bunyan story about them. Or you could just make one up. A geography lesson done in this way will be more effective than just a dry, boring lesson about maps. Humor and storytelling makes information more memorable, and your students will have a nicer time and learn more effectively with Paul Bunyan as their geography tutor. For a more traditional writing exercise, your students can retell popular Paul Bunyan stories or come up with their own. And really, the stories don't have to be that original. That's not what they're for. The most important thing about a Paul Bunyan story is that it must be entertaining. You could take a small story, like Baby Paul causing tidal waves from rocking in his boat cradle, and spin that out into a 20-minute yarn. If you've never tried telling tall tales, it might be useful to read what Mark Twain wrote in his essay, How to Tell a Story. He describes the traits of American storytelling, and here are a few useful tips he gives for how to tell a humorous story. The humorous story may be spun out to great length and may wander around as much as it pleases and arrive nowhere in particular. The humorous story bubbles gently along. The humorous story is told gravely. The teller does his best to conceal the fact that he even dimly suspects that there is anything funny about it. But the teller of the comic story tells you beforehand that this is one of the funniest things he has ever heard, then tells it with eager delight, and is the first person to laugh when he gets through. And sometimes, if he's had good success, he is so glad and happy that he'll repeat the nub of it and glance around from face to face, collecting applause, and then repeat it again. It's a pathetic thing to see. Very often, of course, the rambling and disjointed humorous story finishes with a nub, point, snapper, or whatever you like to call it. Then the listener must be alert, for in many cases, the teller will divert attention from that nub by dropping it in a carefully casual and indifferent way, with the pretense that he does not know it is a nub. That is some excellent advice from Mark Twain, and I'd suggest that it applies completely to the telling of stories about Paul Bunyan. Your creations should be funny, but they're more funny if they're told earnestly, as if the teller isn't trying to be funny. The ideal place for telling a tale about Paul Bunyan is around a campfire. But if you can't manage one, you can always put some candles or a flashlight on the floor and pretend. If you really want to build the mood, you could play some sound effects from a North American forest at night in the background. Have your kids share their Paul Bunyan stories. If possible, revisit the tales in a few months after kids have had time to think about them and make improvements. I love a good tall tale. So if you or your kids come up with one, please send it my way. You've been listening to the Children's Literature Podcast. Please subscribe and give the show a rating. Send comments to letters@childrensliteraturepodcast.com. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. Thanks for listening.